In podcast 802 and 803, we're going to do a two-parter, a discussion of local issues and local political activism with Andrew Richter and Jason Bradley of Community Solutions MN. Couple of things. Three of us have done podcasts together before, so we get pretty comfortable. I'm going to post a link to a podcast those guys did with me a few years ago. I think it's in the 200s, something like that. And then I also appear on their latest podcast, which is their 100th podcast, which should be up at the Community Solutions website and Spotify, and I'll post links for that on the blog page. Second, both of these guys have actually forgotten more about community activism than I'll ever learn, and probably more than most state legislatures have any knowledge of. And it doesn't matter where you come down on the so-called political spectrum. Don't get offended if you hear the words Republican or conservative, because one of the things that I've learned is that most of these local issues really are, I don't want to say nonpartisan, they're actually highly partisan, but you find, as they put it, strange bedfellows in local politics. So you're going to want to listen to these podcasts. Part one concentrates on who these guys are and how Community Solutions MN got started. They were just regular guys that got upset about some stuff going on in their community. Lots of details about Minnesota-specific issues, since this is where they do their work, but these lessons apply to really any local township, village, city, regardless of where you are in the U.S., and increasingly even in major cities where top-down control and taxation and so forth are becoming major, major issues. They have actually called it the death of rural America, which I think is really a fascinating idea when you stop and think about the amount of top-down controls. All right, so I'm going to get these guys on, and we're going to go from here. Well, the biggest story in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois right now is this cold, cold weather, even though it's going to be warm again this coming weekend. When you're probably hearing this podcast, you're probably going to think it's summer, because we're going to go from 25 below to 38 degrees, which is a huge temperature differential. And this kind of thing wreaks havoc with heating and plumbing. And I always remind people that Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business is available to address your problems at home or business. More later in this podcast, but here's the number in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Online at ryanplumbing.com. And because there are probably a number of people listening to this podcast that probably wouldn't normally be listening to the Bob Davis podcast, very quickly, we're available at Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, as I mentioned, Blog Talk Radio, pretty much all over the place, but especially at thebobdavispodcast.com, where there is live streaming of audio of the last three podcasts and all 800 plus of the Bob Davis podcasts as we get on down the road toward 1,000 podcasts in the near future. So that is where you can get the BobDavisPodcasts.com. All right, let me turn some switches here and bring these guys up, and we'll go from here. So for people, we're going to talk a lot about community issues. We're going to talk about what issues people are concerned about in municipalities, localities, in this podcast, and in part one and part two. But I want Jason and Andrew to tell us a little bit about Community Solutions Minnesota. So why don't you guys start out and describe what it is that you do, how it started, and then we'll go from there.
Thanks, Bob. Well, it happened a long time ago. You know, we're good conservatives that just enjoyed fishing and hunting. And, but minded our own business, raising families and whatever, you know, whatever most of us do, we were caught up doing that. And once upon a time, I got a notice. I found out from our city that they were going to be redoing a local county road, County Road 81. Some of you are familiar with that, maybe under its name, Botno Boulevard, which I don't dare utter. But
that's what the elitists call it.
Yes.
Oh, so everyone calls it County Road 81 up there.
Yeah. Those who still oppose the light rail line they want to put up there call County Road 81.
Ah, that's why they call it the Botno line.
Yes. So anyways, it was a 4-lane road that they wanted to make 6 lanes. They wanted to take the current frontage road, move it to what's called a backage road, which that's a fancy term for a frontage road that's on a residential street behind buildings, okay. Rather than right out on the main road. I found out about it. I went and told all my neighbors about it. They had no idea. I went and talked to the local businesses. They had no idea. I talked to the city council.
They had no idea.
Well, they got all the facts to me. I at the city, I went to my local VFW and I handed out flyers to all of my neighbors up and down 81 and held a meeting in that VFW where I told them all about the project. Everybody was super angry. We went to City Hall, had standing room only in a city council meeting, and they said that they were going to go through with the project anyways. I don't think they needed any arm twisting, but the project manager from Hennepin County was like, if you don't fix, or if you don't go along with our plan, we're not going to fix the road. So anyways, we all left that meeting saying that, election is coming, you guys better watch out. Then nobody did anything, because that's what people do in elections.
Right.
They get mad for 15 minutes and then...
They get mad and then they go back to watching Fox News.
Yes. except where we're from in Crystal, Minnesota. Far fewer people watch that, I think.
What are they watching? The local news at 10.
What's all that stuff on the computer now?
Cat up a tree, details at 10.
Yeah. Yeah. FlixNet and all that stuff.
Yeah. FlixNet.
So they decided to go through with it. Later on, they decided that they were going to put forth an idea where Hennepin County was going to pay for some of the road, but then they were going to make Crystal pay for some of the road. Andrew and I didn't like that. We came away from the last meeting and had no idea why the city chose to do what they were doing. I started a group meeting in a basement with a bunch of people, local conservative activists, and we started just learning about local government, and we dug our teeth into it. It was a different topic every month, and we would talk about it and do research and study. And I mean, it was everything.
And I think you have to remember the time. We're talking 2007, 8, 9-ish.
Right.
When, Republicans all over the country were borderline suicidal. I mean, it was a rough couple of years there. And living in an area that at the time was, your 60-40 DFL district or whatever you want to call it, our kind of focus was, okay, if we can't win the state races, or we're not going to until we elect some people locally, how do we even begin? I mean, you're talking about the beginning of the beginning, Jay.
Yeah.
The very bottom of city government, who makes the agenda, who decides what goes on it, what's a work session, what does a planning commission do? I mean, it was, I walked into this knowing absolutely not a single thing about any of this. I walked in knowing nobody on the council. They hated me very quickly, but talk about a learning curve. I mean, people talk about a learning curve at the state or something. The learning curve locally is incredible. You pick out a city financial document, and the first thing you look at and go is, okay, what language is this written in?
Yeah, that's right.
It's not English, okay? Which, I'm paying something on my taxes. I can't figure out where it's going. You have no idea. Mm-hmm. Even to this day, 10 years into this, and Jason and I are seen as not to toot our own horn, but experts on this, if I use that term loosely, or very knowledgeable. And I, to this day, pull out budgets and scratch my head and pull out comprehensive annual financial reports.
Well, my favorite example of that is if you want to know how, let's say, Minneapolis is spending their money, you can find plenty of documents that show you the pie. Well, here's where we've allocated, and this is what, but you won't find a budget anywhere that tells you how much they've got in the bank, that tells you what they're spending on. You won't find an operating budget, in other words, like you would find in a business. What's your operating budget? Well, we're supposed to send, $500 and we didn't. So we've got an extra $500 there. We have to put back to the bottom line, et cetera. The other thing is, one of the things that I've been doing is trying to figure out where all these subsidies for light rail construction and other subsidized types of constructions comes from. Because when you say to them, they say, oh, we're going to put a train through the Bottineau line, and it's going to produce, people are going to build around it. It's going to create development. You have to go back and look and find out where all of those subsidies come from, as I'm sure that you know. That in itself is a Herculean task.
It is. It used to run through the County Transit Improvement Board. Huh? They used to be the people where that filtered, where that quarter cent sales tax went. Now that that's gone, the counties themselves have taken it upon themselves to subsidize that. And then if you want to know, and I'll just, again, I don't want to dive into this because it's just way too, I mean, I could do a whole 6 hours on this. You want to dive into the development money, you have to close the budget and open the comprehensive annual financial report. That is their balance sheet. Of course, it's supposed to be at the auditor's office, and strangely, they don't update that.
And it's not online, yes? Or is it?
It should be, but again, every city is slightly different. I'll use a nameless city here because we helped out somebody in office very recently, and I won't out that person here. I had to talk to the city manager to get their budget. It was not out in the public.
And you had to basically say, look, this is a public document. You have to give it to me.
Yeah, I strong-armed him. I'll put it that way. But technically, the state auditor's office, the comprehensive annual financial report, is due on June 30th every year to coincide with the state budget. So those auditor reports are supposed to be turned into the state auditor's office, and they are supposed to be updated all the time.
Huh.
Now, strangely, as soon as Rebecca Otto took office, those things were very, very difficult to find. You almost personally have to request them at a state level. Most cities will publish that, but again, it might be 200 pages, and it might be very, very difficult to interpret all of those documents.
Right.
They have all these funds, and they have their, you know, what they owe in bonding is in one place. The interest they pay is on the budget. So it's a learning curve in itself. I mean, you'd think, you know, a city that just has a police department and a fire department, and you'd think it wouldn't be so hard to figure out, okay, X is going in and Y is going out. But let me tell you something. Understanding those financial documents is something that Jason and I, I'll be blunt, are still getting our arms around.
And you're probably light years ahead of the average citizen in terms of understanding those documents. And so you went to this meeting, and it all was all over the Bottineau line, which, by the way, they are going to build as soon as they get finished building the Southwest line that no one wants, and especially not the rich people in Kenwood. That, you know, my friends, my Democrat friends, are very upset about the light rail line, the Southwest light rail line. And I say to them, what did you think was going to happen? And they get very angry at me because I say, you know, you've got one party government in Minneapolis and in many of the suburbs and the, you know, the Chamber of Commerce and everybody else. And that's okay, but they think all in one way. And so when suddenly, you know, Democrats are upset because, you know, they're going to build three 24-story buildings and shove a giant hotel into the corner where the BP station is at 7 and Excelsior Highway, suddenly now all the Democrats are upset. It's like, yeah, and what have you been putting into office for the last 25 years in Minneapolis and St. Paul? But I want to ask you, so you went into this whole Bottineau line thing. Was this the birth of Community Solutions?
It was. And, you know, like I say, we were meeting in a basement and studying these things monthly, you know, and once we finally started to get our arms around this kind of thing, we were provided with an opportunity where, and I had alluded to this before, where Hennepin County came along and said, we're going to pay for part of this road construction that we strong-armed you into, and you get to pay for the other part. And so Crystal was going to put forth this resolution, and Andrew and I...
Wait a minute. You got to pick up a second.
All right.
Hennepin County was putting a levy
yes.
on the city of Crystal.
Yes.
And the city council was going to allow them to do that for 5 years.
Yes, they were.
Not that Crystal was going to pay. This was a new levy.
Right. Additional tax money.
Additional levy. Yeah.
Yes. And that's very important. I mean, this is additional tax money over and above what we're already paying.
Right.
Andrew and I decided to go house to house, and we had a couple other volunteers that went with us. We went around with a petition that says, do you think that we as people who live here have a right to have a say on this? Should we be able to vote on it?
We wanted to put it on the ballot.
Yes. That was what we were so it wasn't even, do you agree with this or not? Is should we have a voice in the process?
Easiest petition to get anybody to sign.
Yep. And so we got a whole list of names, whole list of numbers. We turned it into the city. And of course, you know, Andrew and I spoke our minds about it. We went and passionately spoke to them. They found a way to disqualify the petition based on a bunch of technicalities like, oh, I can't read this name, or I think the husband and signed for himself and the wife.
Remember what they said too? It had to have some like Stalinist oath at the bottom of it or something, like that.
Something like that.
But I'll tell you what we did have. A list of 500 ticked off people.
Yeah.
Which was a better list than we could get from the Republican Party anytime in the next 500 years.
Yeah, because they're not upset about anything.
Yeah. Right. So we speak about this, and the mayor, the sitting mayor at the time, who's no longer the mayor, told Andrew, if you don't like what we're doing, you can go move to the middle of nowhere in a public meeting.
Nice.
Yeah. So Andrew and I decided we are going to replace everybody that sits on that city council. And it took us 3 election cycles. We did.
Good for you.
We replaced all of them.
Yeah, I mean, we nearly stroked out.
Have you talked to those guys since? Have you run across them at the barbershop or the,
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we're still their favorite Facebook topic.
Yeah. No, the former mayor probably should look into meds. she ended up marrying a guy that was on the council. So you had a husband and wife on the council by the time we removed them. I remember him throwing my change at me at some event to like a corn feed.
I run into him. He's a Crystal Lion, so.
Well, I hate my printer because I hate paying for print cartridges. It's that simple. The printer's great. It's the cartridges that are highway robbery, especially at the big box retail stores. And I am free of that forever because I've found Cartridge World in Maple Grove. They can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores. And their cartridges are guaranteed to work as well as the new cartridges. In fact, I think they're better. Free delivery on qualifying orders. They can help you out wherever you are in the United States and wherever you're hearing this podcast. But if you're in the North Metro in Minneapolis and St. Paul, you can go see the guys at Cartridge World in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway, 763-420-6632, or click on the Cartridge World banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. When you identify yourself as a conservative or a Republican, there's a certain group of people that will automatically turn off because they don't want to hear any Republicans speak, and they don't want to hear people talk as conservatives. And as you know, I detest those terms because they're absolutely not descriptive. If you're a fiscal conservative, if you're the kind of person that wants to have input into what your community does, if you drive through some traffic test thing with 14 stop signs and calming lanes in your town, and you don't like that and you want to have an input, if you're a person who lived in an apartment building or in a house and they're taking away a portion of your land to put light rail through or a bike trail through, God forbid that you would be a Democrat, you might be someone that would be susceptible to what you guys are doing. So I hesitate for you to say we're conservatives because I don't see it that way. Conservatives don't do anything. The conservatives I know sit in their chairs covered with knitted blankets watching the Dan Bongino show, and that's all they do. They don't do anything. You're talking about a younger, more active group of people who may or may not be conservatives. I mean, do you have any crazy, Democrat anarchists, left-wing anarchists as part of your group?
You'd be surprised the strange bedfellows that are in local politics. I mean, here's the thing. You tear down somebody's neighborhood and put up something new.
That's right.
Nobody cares what you identify as. Now, am I a conservative personally? And when I go into the voting booth, sure. When I talk about the interest on a bond that the city's paying. I don't know if that's liberal or conservative. I don't know if a sidewalk is liberal or a bike lane.
A bike lane is liberal. Just
yeah, so. But I mean, people.
Well, the bike lane is liberal when you don't have to have it running through your backyard. And I made this comment on the radio, and somebody got on my case about it. But here's the thing. I know for a fact that when they put those bike trails down along the whatever that rail line is that goes through Kenwood at, down there, I forget what the Cedar line or something, and they put the bike trail in, it was the rich Democrats in Kenwood that went absolutely crazy over that and complained and fought that. So
it's no surprise because, you know, what you just mentioned, they love transportation options except where they live.
Well, there you go. And that's really why when you say a bike lane is liberal, well, it's only liberal if it's over in the other neighborhood. Then it's...
I guess what I more mean is that a lot of local issues, you know, one of the things Jason and I talk a lot about is, you know, switching to charter cities and having a home rule constitution rather than statutory. We talk about
What's the difference between that, the statutory versus charter?
Okay, well, most cities in Minnesota are statutory, the vast majority of them, which basically means that the state legislature has come up with a bunch of state statutes by which your city is organized. They can change those at any time that they want to vote to change the law, and then your city must comply.
Okay.
That's the short version.
Yeah, you have no control.
If you have a home rule charter city, you have a city constitution.
Ah.
That is separate.
Which is guided by state statutes, but you still have way more flexibility and I would say ability to push back on some things because you're writing your own founding documents.
How many cities in Minnesota are charter?
About what, 20%, Jay, something like
probably
that?
About 20%. Yeah. Yeah.
It's definitely the minority.
And how do they do?
Pardon?
How do they do compared to the statutory cities?
Well, I mean, they do fine. I mean, are you talking financially or are you talking...
Is there any appreciable difference between the performance, let's say, of a statutory city versus a charter city?
It depends who's on the council.
Because here's the problem. A lot of the home rule charter cities are organized the same way that the statutory cities are as far as... they break down this way. This is a long story too, and I won't bring in all the history, but basically because of all the corruption in the old days, looking back to Tammany Hall and all that kind of stuff and the way that city councils were devised,
right.
Eventually they came up with a system that's called weak mayor council system.
Yes.
Or a council manager system.
Except in Chicago.
Right. Well, there's a few places where they have other ones, but...
New York.
But... with these systems, the mayor is just another voice on the council and gets another vote. You still have all the power in the legislative body. Your executive branch is a bunch of employees that are hired, a city manager or administrator by the council, and then that person goes and hires all the staff, and they execute all of the city laws. That is how almost every city in Minnesota is run, whether it's a home rule charter city or a statutory city. There are those that are strong mayor council. You have, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, St. Cloud, I think Rochester.
There might be one or two more, but not many.
Yeah, it's mostly your bigger cities. And we do advocate for the strong mayor setup. The problem is with a lot of smaller cities, your mayors can't serve, you know, they'd have to quit their job and be a full-time mayor.
Right. But
I think that there's some room to work in between that as well, especially if you're writing your charter so that maybe your mayor doesn't have to be full-time and your staff reports to the mayor. And, you know.
The point is is the checks and balances of that are in the legislative process of the state, federal government, are not in the city process.
Yep, there's no veto.
Well, there's no, you look at Hennepin County, I mean, this is a better example. You've got seven people, four people can literally be dictators.
Yes.
I mean, there's no check on the majority there.
Right. State law does allow at the county and even at the school level to have an executive in charge that it is not part of the county board, the school board, the city council. But I don't know of a single county that is set up that way. There's a handful of cities.
Okay.
Monkey see,
so,
monkey.
So now, to end part one, I want you to take all of what you guys just talked about, kind of, without going back over the same ground.
Right.
And explain what people do with this. In other words, Community Solutions helps people in communities solve mm-hmm. problems by helping them with getting involved and maybe changing the city council if that's what's necessary. So we talked about a lot of really Byzantine elements, which unfortunately is a reality of our communities. It doesn't matter where we live in Minnesota. And we're going to talk about that in part two, because I know you guys have been studying what issues exist throughout the state and throughout smaller communities. But how do you tie all this together to say, this is what this, we've learned all these lessons. And while you guys are humble enough to say, we now know what we don't know, you know more than almost anyone that I know when it comes to these local communities, unless they're an attorney, mm-hmm. you know, who actually works with local communities. How do you tie all this together to explain to people what you're about?
Well, kind of going back to where we came from, once we made all these changes in Crystal, we're kind of like, well, what now? And we looked around, it's like every city has the same problem. All the cities seem to be run the same. And there are these groups like this League of Minnesota Cities, where all but three cities in Minnesota belong to this. And yet, it's done under the pretense of providing insurance to cities for, getting sued and stuff like that, that really they do a lot of brainwashing as well. And they teach incoming city council people where to get the free money, where to go for the grants, how to implement welcoming cities, how to implement Minnesota Green Step cities, all of this stuff. They take all these policies and they put them down on these cities. So that's really the first part of this, is that every city seems to be facing the same problems, and it doesn't matter if it's a metro city, it doesn't matter if it's greater Minnesota. All of these things, we have found the same things all throughout the state.
Okay, so in part two, we're going to talk about what those problems are, but you would contrast that statement with the work of at least one mayor that we know who shall remain unnamed, who refused all that and basically kept cutting the city budget until they have the lowest tax regime of the entire state. And I think that's really important, that it can be done if people have the will to do it. And then you do have the wherewithal to say, well, you know, maybe we can do some community improvements here. But I want to talk about the issues that are facing these communities and what people need to know to start to get started without saying this is the conservative way to do this, or this is the, God forbid, the Republican way to do this, or because communities, people have to work together and they come from different angles. And I am often shocked at the plurality that happens when you get people together who might as well be Marxists and with fascists, and they're like, well, I agree with you, and they're shocked when it comes. They can agree about their community. That is fascinating. And you have these people who are absolutely at loggerheads when it comes to national issues, which have nothing to do with them, generally speaking, even tax policy. And when you start talking about the local community and you're talking about garbage pickup, or you're talking about roundabouts, or you're talking about train lines, suddenly the party labels fall away and people start working together. So we'll talk about that in the second half. Thanks to the digital sponsor, the BobDavisPodcast.com, Alpha Systems. You guys, if you're a pilot, the air show is coming up at EAA. A lot of people doing the fly-in, and it's a great opportunity to think about putting an angle of attack indicator in your aircraft, because Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at the BobDavisPodcasts.com. Okay, we're on the road to part two of the Community Solutions Minnesota podcast with Bob Davis, and we're going to talk in the next podcast about some of these local issues, and we're going to get into very much granular details with Andrew Richter and Jason Bradley of Community Solutions Minnesota, and I'll throw links up so you can figure out how to get a hold of these guys and talk to them, because they can help you with really any problem that you may have in your community. Stay tuned. Just click on the next podcast, or go ahead and let it play through if you're on iTunes or Google Play or Spotify, Blog Talk Radio, and you'll hear it. Or if you're listening on the stream, hang on, because Davis. The next podcast is coming up, part two, with these guys at the Bob Davis Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever had a dream?